From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where you get a deeper dive into stories from our radio newsrooms across the nation. Today On Deadline is looking at the latest buzzword taking over headlines and talk shows, Project 2025. Now, we understand if this has flown under the radar for you, since there's been a lot of big news coming out, from an assassination attempt on a former president to a major ticket candidate dropping out of a presidential race just a few months before an election. And Project 2025 may sound more like something out of science fiction or something that happens in Area 51 than political news. But what it really is actually fairly simple. Here are the details. Project 2025 is a conservative plan authored by the powerful Heritage Foundation, meant to be followed by the next Republican president as a blueprint. This document calls for using executive powers when Congress won't agree to enact conservative policies on hot-button topics. These topics include abortion, retirement age, tax cuts for the wealthy, limiting the United States' role in NATO, developing new nuclear weapons, abolishing the Education Department, reducing legal immigration, defunding NPR and PBS, outlawing pornography, and more. Yeah, that list did escalate pretty quickly. The Project 2025 plan is detailed in a nearly 1,000-page document. It's officially named Mandate for Leadership, the Conservative Promise. It includes 30 chapters, one for each federal agency to follow the next time a member of the GOP has the Oval Office. The Heritage Foundation has said it sought input from more than 100 different conservative groups and several former Trump administration members. But while conservatives may be praising the plan and hoping that former President Donald Trump, should he be reelected, act on it, others are raising the warning flag. Many believe it goes way too far to circumvent the actual wishes of Americans. This week, Project 2025 director Paul Danz, a former top advisor in Trump's administration, announced that he would step down amidst criticism of the plan. As we record this, it's not clear if the project is over or simply moving into a new phase. To share more on the project, Jacob Neuheisel, a political science professor at the University of Buffalo, joined Odyssey.
Well, let's talk Project 2025. What is it and what's in it?
So what it is, well, it's a roughly, I think, a 1,000-page document. And to be clear, I've not read it in its entirety. I've read the highlights of it. But it's basically a blueprint to hit the ground running in a second Trump administration. And it's a blueprint to gut the administrative state. And so it's really a wish list of lots of things that they'd like to see rolled back about the federal bureaucracy in particular. So a lot of it's, you know, extraordinarily aspirational, but it's a good signal as to what they'd ideally like to do with the administrative state if Trump were to be reelected.
And how would they gut the administrative state? Isn't that the government?
Yes. So, I mean, we're talking bureaucracy here. So things that it answer to ultimately the president. Of course, Congress has oversight over a lot of these federal agencies, but they're talking about things like eliminating the Department of Education, bringing the Department of Justice to heel. It's really going to be done through making a lot of positions that were formerly civil service positions political appointees. There are still political appointees in the federal bureaucracy, but since civil service reform, a lot more of those are professional positions, meaning they serve from administration to administration. They're experts. They have expertise in particular things that are job relevant, and they have the kinds of training to do their job. They can't just be, you know, somebody who is a good loyalist, which is how the process worked prior to the institution of civil service reform, you know, roughly the end of the 19th century. So it's a plan to really kind of take a step back in time toward a more directly accountable bureaucracy.
Should federal employees be nervous, specifically if they have a party affiliation that's different than a would-be president?
Quite possibly. Yes. Yeah, so if they were to get their wish list and be able to do some of the things that they're talking about, which, to be clear, is kind of an open question. There are a lot of constitutional issues surrounding their wish list and how they would go about getting their wish list. But yes, I think that it's a signal that if you're a non-political appointee in the administrative state, you're somebody who's a civil servant. Yeah, I think it would be cause to be worried.
Tell us about the Heritage Foundation.
So the Heritage Foundation is, you know, one of the larger, if not the largest, conservative-leaning think tank in D.C. For a long time, they were sort of, you know, institutional Republican. But in the last couple years, they've really, I don't want to say been captured by, but they've really tacked to the hard right on a lot of things. And they've been hiring a lot of former Trump officials. And I think it's now, you know, went from being kind of institutional centrist right to pretty far right on a number of issues. And I think it signals a shift in the right more generally, where, you know, you kind of get this Buckley-esque, you know, the famous line he had was, you know, standing athwart history yelling stop. That's what a conservative is. I think they got really tired of yelling stop, right? The Republican would get in, they would cut taxes, they would, you know, undercut the administrative state in some very nuanced kinds of ways, but for the most part, they didn't do anything drastic. And I think it was time to stop yelling stop for them, and it's now time to just really, really taking a razor blade to a lot of the administrative state.
How does Project 2025 differ from the GOP platform?
So they are distinct documents, and I think that they're, you know, Project 2025 is a lot more detailed in a lot of places, and also I think, you know, fairly extreme. The platform, at least the details of it that I was looking at, the Republican Party platform this time around more closely matches, I think, the Trump agenda than it does the Heritage Foundation document, right? Things like, I think most notably, that they have a statement on abortion that kind of cuts the cultural conservatives out. The cultural conservatives wanted a call for a constitutional amendment outright, you know, recognizing the rights of the unborn, but that didn't make the cut. What actually makes it is, look, due to our efforts, the states get a say in this, and that's where it should stay. So they don't really take a more hardline stance on that, whereas I think, you know, Project 2025 is pretty clearly the, you know, farther to the right than the institutional Republican Party is right now.
Whether you agree with its principles or not, the document has already gathered a lot of attention. Democrats, President Joe Biden, and Vice President Kamala Harris are trying to tie Project 2025 to Trump, although he is vocally disavowing any association with it. Biden's campaign says that Project 2025 is meant to, quote, give Trump more power over your daily life, gut Democratic checks and balances, and consolidate power in the Oval Office if he wins. Here's more on the policy from the mouth of one of the people who wrote it, Hans von Spakovsky. He's a senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation, and he joined Odyssey to talk about the plan. We should note for our listeners that the Heritage Foundation is a conservative think tank with a clear point of view, and here they're defending their own work.
Hans, this has been characterized as so many things. I mean, it must be the most far-reaching thing that's ever been produced in the history of the world. And I read a good portion of the 900-plus pages of what Project 2025 is trying to accomplish. Not a lot there that I found astonishing or obnoxious. So if you would, for the benefit of the listening audience, tell us what Project 2025 is about.
Sure. 2 years ago. So this is long before the presidential race got started, the Heritage Foundation organized over 100 conservative think tanks and advocacy organizations and basically said, look, if you were in control of the executive branch of the federal government, what would you do? How would you change policies? And the end result is, as you said, a 900-page book with chapters on every major executive agents, Department of Justice, Department of Defense, Department of Education, each chapter saying, well, here's what the purpose of this particular department is. Here are the mistakes and problems of this department. And here's how it should be reformed and what the policy should be going forward. You know, I challenge anybody who's been listening to this hysterical criticism from the left, calling it anti-democratic, et cetera. Look, they can go, this is not a secret. They can go to the website for Project 2025, pull it up, pick a chapter on one of the departments, Department of Education. I am willing to bet you that after you read it, you're going to say, well, this is just common sense. This is the way the government ought to be operating.
Yeah, I read one of the parts that I read was the Department of Education. I was kind of curious as to where that was going to be, and I didn't find anything in there obnoxious at all. I mean, it all made perfect sense to me. It ought to rely with the states. We don't really need a Department of Education. There's nothing that the federal government, in my view, needs to be advocating for or against through the creation of the Department of Education, which was, I think, created, what, in the early 1960s by Lyndon Johnson as a result of the Civil Rights Act. And I think it, you know, has reached a logical end for this organization. Democrats are saying that it terminates the Constitution. So I read the summary and I read what was going on there. Where are they getting that from?
They're just making that up. I mean, they are the Biden campaign and Democrats in Congress and elsewhere have basically put out complete and total fabrications about this. For example, the Biden campaign has apparently put out bullet points saying this plan would shut down the Food and Drug Administration and the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. That is a complete lie. In fact, if you look at the 900-page book, you'll see we have chapters on both those agencies about how they should be reformed, not shut down. Another lie that I heard being repeated was that, oh, this plan would get rid of no-fault divorce across the country. The word divorce is nowhere mentioned anywhere in this plan because this is about the federal government and how it should be run. Divorce is something handled by the states. I mean, I got to tell you, Newell, I think what's going on is because, look, this plan's been out for quite a while. This is not something new. I think this is an attempt to distract the public.
So I'm going to ask you the question directly. How much of an influence did Donald Trump himself have in the creation of Project 2025?
He didn't have any. In fact, this was started in 2022 and was most of it was written long before he even announced he was going to be a candidate. Like I said, 122 different organizations participated in it. And for example, there's a chapter there about the Department of Justice. That chapter, while it was written by one person, there's one author, there was a whole committee of people involved in coming up with those reforms, and they spanned probably every Republican administration you can imagine, going all the way back to the Reagan administration. So we were drawing on lots and lots of experience of people who actually worked in that department to say, what are the reforms that are needed? And listen, anybody who has been watching the news for the past year or two and seen how that department has been corrupted and weaponized has got to agree that deep reforms are needed there.
As we said before, some Democrats are framing Project 2025 as a guiding document for Trump, but he does tell a different story. During an interview with Fox News last week, he touched on the plan, specifically its abortion stance, and said he thinks it goes too far. Is Trump reading the room and backing away from something he planned to follow, or does he really believe Project 2025 goes too far? To give some perspective on how the country is responding, CBS News White House correspondent Major Garrett joined Odyssey.
So, if you go to the website or you buy the book, there are parts of it that are very dense, very deep in the weeds of federal bureaucracy for every cabinet agency. And they're written by people who are either participants in the Trump administration the first term or serious scholars from a conservative ideological point of view about how the federal government works. So in one sense, you can think of it as just any other book about how to do government differently. You could also think of it as a doorstop, okay? It's that dense and hard to penetrate some parts of it. It's important in this context because some of the orientation of the scholars to what's wrong with the federal government differ from previous iterations of this kind of book. The Heritage Foundation, which is the lead organizing think tank behind this, has done this since 1980 in one form or another. But the language now is much more strident. It talks about cultural Marxism overtaking our country and the entire federal government, weaponized and arrayed in a hostile way against the interests and desires of individual Americans. And it sort of talks in a kind of apocalyptic way about undoing this great behemoth that exists only to deprive Americans of their individual rights and liberties. That's different. That kind of language inspires not only an ideological approach, but a sort of methodological approach to government that many on the left quite understandably regard as threatening, and many in the center haven't heard before and wonder just how serious these conservative Trumpist-influenced ideologues really are.
Would it give a president dictatorial or king-like powers?
Well, it doesn't, because the Constitution doesn't create a king. However, and I've read a good amount of this manifesto, and it always defaults to the Article II powers of the president, overlooking entirely Article I. Article I, which is longer than Article II in the Constitution, defines all congressional powers. And through the first 100 to 150 years of our government, Congress was the key factor in our government, not the president. The president proposed, Congress disposed, power to tax, power to spend, all of that flowed through Congress, and presidents did have certain defined powers. But this Project 2025 orients itself entirely to the powers of the executive branch and describes them as almost supreme entirely. And that doesn't create a dictator, but if you have personnel, if you swap out everyone in the civil service ranks with your own loyalists, kind of return a quasi-patronage system to the federal government where everyone is a loyalist, everyone is essentially not only on your ideological but practical payroll, then you have foot soldiers who carry out all of your dictates. And with a new Supreme Court ruling talking about anything that is an official act cannot be criminally prosecuted, you suddenly imagine a bandwidth of executive power larger than we currently imagine, or that maybe even the founders envision.
Following the assassination attempt on Trump's life, there's been a growing call to dial down the heat in our political rhetoric here in the U.S. Both Trump and Biden gave addresses to the nation where they stressed the importance of unity and of healthy debate without threats of violence or over-the-top rhetoric. But with more than 80% of Americans feeling that political violence is an issue in the United States, it still remains to be seen if we can set aside our differences and cast our support and votes to differing candidates in peace. To stay in the loop on everything going on this political season, keep listening to the On Deadline podcast. This show is produced by Joe Heedy, Christy Strouser, and by me. I'm Lauren Barry, and I want to say thanks for listening to On Deadline, Odyssey's serving of a top news story just for you. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts to stay informed.